The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hello, can I have a chance, please?
This is him. Is this Grandmaster Cam?
Yeah. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good, great. Where are you?
I'm in New York.
You are in New York?
Yes.
Oh,
so how are you?
Great, fantastic. So when did you see Miami Connection?
About the time that I contacted you. I think it was over the holiday break.
So how much did you like it?
Oh, God, I loved it. That's why I wanted to get you on here.
That's good news. That's fantastic. Yeah, I need a lot of people like you.
So if you're ready, I guess we can get started.
Yeah, sure.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight we speak with Grandmaster YK Kim of Miami Connection on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Cinema, where the focus is on film that matters, cult, grindhouse, drive-in, independent, and underground film from the dawn of the talkies through the early 90s. Tonight we'll be chatting with the man behind Miami Connection and the new American dream, the one and only Grandmaster YK Kim. Yes, this is a man who's been involved in only one film to date, but what a film it is. A black belt in Taekwondo in his native Korea by the ripe old age of 13, Kim came to our shores in the very shadow of Ellis Island to pursue the American dream from the bottom up, without any real proficiency in the English language or promise of steady work. After establishing himself in his new home base of Central Florida, Kim was given the opportunity to write, cast, produce, and star in a unique and extremely entertaining piece of grindhouse history intended to promote the value of Taekwondo and incorporating rock music, bikers, drug dealers, and even Florida-based ninja into its all-too-brief running time. Now better known for a chain of martial arts schools in the southern region of the East Coast, as well as making a name for himself as an infomercial maven and inspirational speaker, Kim joins us to discuss his story, his philosophy on life in the martial arts, and the amazing Miami Connection. Join us for a positively charged, good-humored interview with a true force of nature, Grandmaster YK Kim, only here on Third Eye Cinema. In our first segment, we'll be discussing Grandmaster Kim's early days, coming to America, and the trials and tribulations behind the scenes of Miami Connection. But first up, we have a song from the movie. Those who have seen Miami Connection will know there's two rather unforgettable, positively focused ditties performed during the course of the film, and this is the one that opens the movie. This is Dragon Sound with Friends. We'll be right back. We have with us today a man who has only been involved in one film, but what a film it is. As a recent emigre to our shores, having taught himself the English language and secured a steady dwelling place only after his arrival, he still managed to establish a martial arts school and cast, produce and star in a unique and extremely entertaining piece of grindhouse history, intended to promote the value of Taekwondo and incorporating rock music, bikers, drug dealers, and even Florida-based ninja into its all-too-brief running time. Now better known for a chain of martial arts school in the southern region of the East Coast, as well as making a name for himself as an infomercial maven and inspirational speaker, please join me in welcoming Grandmaster YK Kim. Grandmaster Kim, welcome
thank
to Third Eye Cinema.
Thank you for having me here.
I think we should start this off talking about your personal journey, you know, your own life story. I understand that you lost your father in the Korean War and wound up becoming a black belt in Taekwondo at the ripe age of 13.
Yeah, you are right. Yeah, you are 100% right. I practiced the early ages.
So what was that like? I mean, having become an orphan suddenly, and then still you wound up becoming the youngest black belt I've ever heard of.
You know, I loved to practice when I was young, and I still love practicing martial arts because martial arts is a change to my life, and it gives me a huge energy every day.
That's pretty amazing, though. I can't think of any martial arts masters that are that young of an age. Did you have any problems getting taken seriously by your peers because of your youth?
No, I didn't have any problem. I think too many people misconception of true meaning of martial arts. You know, martial arts is not just kicking or punching. It is
right.
Truly, you know, self-improvement program. So I need, you need, everybody need to practice martial arts because
right.
Everybody need to improve themselves so they can have healthier and wealthier and happier their lives, you know.
But, I mean, being so young and being a black belt, did you run into any people looking down on you or not taking you seriously, you know, other black belts that were in their 20s, 30s, and 40s?
Yeah, it doesn't matter age, you know. Martial artists respect each other. When I was young, as many, many older people, they showed the true love and respect and care. That is a martial arts philosophy all about. So I did not have any problems.
So what led you to leave your homeland of South Korea for Argentina?
You know, I wanted to come to USA, but I did not have a visa. And at that time, it's pretty difficult to come to USA without, you know, visa. And you know, to get the visa is very difficult. So I came to the USA in 1976, and I went to South America, and I got the visa,
right.
And I come to the 1977 in New York.
Okay, so you went there as an interim measure to try to get a visa to get here.
You are 100% right.
So I understand that you actually started off up here in New York City, but you didn't have either a steady residence or a job. And if I heard correctly, you didn't even know English at the time.
Yeah, you're right. But I taught the class in New York City, in Manhattan. Yeah. And then I moved to the Orlando in 1978.
I was actually going to get to that. I was going to say, you must have picked up enough to get employment, because I understand that you're working as a janitor for some time. So while you were doing that for a living, how did you start off teaching Taekwondo? I mean, did you have enough saved up to open a school, or were you giving private lessons?
Yeah, you know, when I lived in New York, I had so many different jobs. Daytime, and then evening, I taught Taekwondo class.
Okay, so were you working out of other schools? You know, people, or?
No, my senior was there. He had a school, so evening, I went to his school, and I taught the class. But
okay.
Daytime, without green card, pretty difficult to find a good job. Because that's painful jobs. Only like I could have.
So how did you wind up moving down after that to Florida and starting the Martial Arts World School, which eventually became a regional chain?
My senior, his name is Grandmaster Dongwin Park. He introduced to me Orlando. So he helped me when I opened the martial arts schools in Orlando.
We'll come back to this in a bit, but let's talk Miami Connection. Tell us about your struggles making and distributing the film and its accidental rediscovery, because it's quite a story.
Yeah, you know, I am a grandmaster of martial arts. I'm proud of martial artists. I love martial arts. I love the practicing and promotion of martial arts throughout my life. But unfortunately, I was not grandmaster of a movie maker.
Right.
It was an accident. It was an accident to produce the Miami Connection. So, you know, I had to pay high price to finish this movie.
Yeah, I mean, because the whole story behind how you got this thing together and how you had to try to shop it around yourself.
Yeah, you know, I was very successful even in the 1980s. So I went to my homeland of Korea, and that watched a popular TV talk show, 1 hour long, and they invited me. So I went on the TV, and I went to the very exciting martial arts exhibition, and I was talking about the martial arts philosophy and true meaning of martial arts spirit. While I was on the TV, very famous action director, Richard Park, he watched me at home. Right. And then I come back to the USA. He just followed me, and then he asked me, would you like to create a movie based on your philosophy and martial arts? So I said right away, yes, because, you know, everybody have some dreams. I had the dreams to make someday, great action films. That right. is the reason I started.
But yet, after you had made this thing, I mean, even while you were making it, there was so much going on with, I understand you had a rewrite. You had recruited people from your school to be actors.
I have to tell you the truth. Anybody want to watch Miami Connection, if they love drama or romance, I don't think this movie is for them at all. However, if they love music and real action, not computer-generated, and true meaning of friendship, I know they're not going to just love the Miami Connection. They will be crazy about the Miami Connection. When I started this movie, I had a nightmare. I almost have a bankruptcy. I did not know when I beginning this movie. I didn't know how to produce a movie at all. And just I said yes. But when I started, it's physically, mentally, emotionally, totally exhausted and dry out money right away. I was looking for a miracle, but miracle is not there. At that time, so only I can see, only bankrupt. But I could not let that things happen because I promised to all my students, 99% of actors and crews, all my students, I promised I will show this movie in the theater. So I could not break the promise as your grand masters at the time. I tried my best, and I faced with so many obstacles, but martial arts spirit helped me to finish these movies. Even if I finished these movies, I tried to sell these movies, so I took the Hollywood. Every single studio said, it is trash. Hey, why can't you? Do not waste your time. Do not waste your money. Do not waste your energy. Just to throw away. That's the best way you can do it. But, I went too far. I could not stop. So I went to Cannes Film Festival in France. So right. I invited the worldwide movie buyers. The same thing happened. And they say the same thing. It is garbage. Throw away. That way you can survive. But again, I could not stop because I went too far. So the one gentleman, he gave me advice. Rewrite, refilm, and re-edit. If you make a new movie, I think we will consider and take your film worldwide. So why I asked them, why you kill the good guy and then bad guy alive? So I back to USA, but I did not know how to produce the movie. Because director is gone already. He went to Korea because we promised when we started U.S. and world, I had the responsibility. He took the movie and showed to Korea.
Right.
So, I bought How to Make Movie, books. So
right.
I read it page by page. And then I asked my students, and Joseph Diamond, he is a screenwriter. So
right.
he was not a screenwriter. He learned from the books. So we writing together and film together, editing together and mixing together, and a new movie came out. So that Manson International, they took to the worldwide. And then I wanted to show Hollywood all the different studios, but right. they reject because they watch already. So I could not do the movie theater, but I promised the students. So I had to open 8 theater in Central Florida. So I promote. I think when I promote, probably at least is over $3 million worth free promotion I had. Like at 5 a.m., I wake up and come back home 12 midnight. sometimes 3 a.m. I had interview. I mean, hundreds of different interview and speech and sign autographs and taking pictures. I met like tens of thousands of people 3 months. Summertime, then over 50 different screens they showed the trailer every day. But after that September, finally we opened, before open, that Orlando Sentinel, where I live in here, and they said, this is a watched movie. But at that time, so many people followed that guy. So when I opened, audience rejected. So actually, this movie, Born at Die, right away.
Ouch. The whole story, because, I mean, just the fact that you had carted this thing around all these major studios, got rejected, flew out to Cannes, you got rejected again. You already sunk so much time and energy and presumably money into the venture. But then the end result, after you do all this work, is that you only managed to get it shown briefly in what I understand was 3 local theaters.
Yeah, in a local theater, I thought I could make it, but, you know, 1980s, they rejected it. So that was the end. So I lost all my investment and my name and my business.
Oof.
But life is life. So, you know, I restarted. I back up. I'm a great, you know, business leader. So
right.
I back up. I stopped again. And after 25 years, I just couldn't believe, you know, that these things happen. So now is what, you know, 2012, and crazy people. And so many people crazy about the movie Miami Connection.
Yeah, and I can't recommend it enough because people that like these kind of action films, kickboxing films from the period, grindhouse films, I mean, this is just, it's a unique film. It's like very entertaining, and I can't even describe it except to say, watch it.
Yeah, I really appreciate your admire about this movie.
And I understand also that the negative was lost in a hurricane at one point.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, we met so many different humongous obstacles last year that the hurricane comes to what? New York, so we have closed. If we had that movie over there, you know, we could have a touch light, all the different kind of medias. That said, we opened again New York and what, L.A. and Austin and 35 different cities. I mean, we competing with 007, the Skyfall, we all sold out.
Wow.
Again, opening day, we sold out. I went to the L.A., people waiting is what, 2 hours, and all sold out. I mean, like 100 people, 200 people, they couldn't buy the ticket.
Wow.
I was really surprised. You know?
And this is for a film that you went through all these blood, sweat, and tears over and really didn't see a dime on until this point. It's amazing. I understand that Draft House, who was really just running a film festival, discovered a $50 print on eBay and picked it up sight unseen.
Yeah, I was really surprised that Jack Carlson, a programmer at the house, he bought this film for $50, he said. And then he showed his wife, he showed his friends, and then he had the premiere. And people crazy about the movie, so they, you know, asked me to redistribute it.
It's fascinating, too, because it's all word of mouth. You know, I've been into cult films all my life, and I have never heard of this. And it came out of nowhere, and people are just saying, you've got to see this. And then everybody that checks it out says, hey, somebody else, you've got to see this. So it's almost like an internet meme. You know, it's just kind of building on its own. This obscure little film that was produced, you know, back in the 80s that was never really seen anywhere, even at the time, is now becoming a big phenomenon.
Yeah, you're right. You know, when Draft House, they invited me to New York. So I went to New York last year, July. So I asked the Draft House, hey, why did you buy this trash? That even he said, what do you mean by that? It's not. So I asked him again, why did you buy this trash? You know, distribution is what requires a lot of money. And he
right.
said, yeah, this is not, you know, daytime movie, family together watch this movie, but is a midnight movie going, so is what they really crazy about this movie. But I was skeptical, so I went to the theater, and at 11 o'clock they start around 300 seats is there. Like at 10:30 p.m., like 20 people show up, so maybe too early, and then what, 10:55. Like around 60 people is what in the theater.
Wow.
So I was so disappointed because, you know, it reminded me 25 years ago what happened. And then after 5 minutes, 11 p.m., when I opened and then went to the stage, I mean, packed. some people, they were standing on the hallway.
Wow.
I was really shocked. And then I turned the exhibition, and I told the audience, thank you, you know, welcome. And then I told them, hey, you know, if you love to watch drama or romance, you are in wrong place. But in case if you love 80s music and exciting action and the true meaning of friendship, I know you will love it. I saw the exhibition, and I sitting with them, audience, watched Howard. I mean, Howard really is surprised. I mean, beginning to finish, people screaming and cheering and clapping. And after finishing movie, nobody leaves. So I went to the my office.
Right.
And then a director, he came out, hey, you know, Master can come up, you know, people looking for you. When I came out, people giving me a huggy, and people said, I've never seen a movie last 10 years. This is better than what? It's $100 million movie, and when you're going to have, you know, next movie, and asking autograph and taking pictures, they treat me like a biggest, like a big star.
Wow.
I was shocked.
You listen to Third Eye Cinema with a special guest tonight, Grandmaster YK Kim. Coming up, we get a bit silly and have a little fun with Miami Connection, only here on Third Eye Cinema.
My name is Niko Mastorakis, and if it's all Greek to you, Google me. I have written, produced, and directed several movies, not all of them good movies, some of them very good movies, but more interesting than the movies themselves is a lengthy interview at Third Eye Cinema. If you miss it, you don't like movies.
Let me take this back a little bit and talk about a few things about the film itself. Now, first of all, you kind of hinted at this, but why wasn't director Richard Park more involved in all this? Because it seems like you were the driving force behind the film all the way, and he contacted you with the idea, and he directed it and sort of walked away from it. You know, and everything I read or heard, it was like you were the one shopping the film around, you were the one promoting it, and you still are the one promoting it. He just sort of vanished off the face of the earth.
Yeah, he's a great director. He's a fascinating director. But first of all, is a lack of English. Second, his interest was too short, just to Korea. So when we finished the movie, he just took the movie to the Korea. So, and after that was my responsibility. So I saw, you know, that happened.
Okay, so it was already kind of in the works.
Yeah, I respect him. I like him. But, you know, we had the contract. I cannot blame anybody except me. So I took the responsibility. So I finished the movie and I showed the theater, but that's what I did.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even talking about blaming him. I was just saying, where did he go? Because all of a sudden he was gone and it was just you shopping it around. But even beyond the amazing story behind the film, there's quite a bit about the film itself that marks it as unique. I mean, first of all, it's the only film you were ever involved with. And I think it may have fallen in something of a transitional period, cinematically speaking. You know, is it the far end of the ninja craze, but a bit early for the kickboxing craze that came in the late 80s, early 90s? And, you know, we had any number of ninja films, generally from Canon Films around 1980 to 85 or so. You know, I think it kicked off with Chuck Norris in The Octagon, and two of its stars went on to continue with the theme because Lee Van Cleef went on to star as the Master on TV. And Shokusugi, who is the evil opposite of Chuck's character, ended up doing a whole bunch of ninja films. Enter the Ninja, Pray for Death, Ninja's the Ninja. So was this whole ninjutsu craze what inspired you to make them an important part of Miami Connection?
You know, I'm a martial artist, so always I wanted to make the greatest movie ever. It's combined the Bruce Lee's and Chuck Norris. I want to make the better movie. I had a dream. So I wanted to promote martial art to a big screens.
Right.
But I did not know about the movie, and I didn't have opportunity yet. So making movies is what costs money, so much money.
Of course,
but,
right.
Very fortunately, I had the opportunity because he watched me when I was on TV. So he came to this one. He asked me, do you want to do it? He did not finish the question. I said yes. I cannot say mistakes. But before I started the movie, I was so successful. Whatever I do, I'm a great, again, as a business leader, and a great, strong martial art teacher. The most successful martial arts business leader in the U.S. and perhaps the world. So I feel I could do anything and everything. So I said yes. When I started to do, oh my God, we didn't even have a script. And
wow.
We started a storyline and 10 people's job. I did it by myself. Everything, castings and colorings and locations, permissions, and dialogue and rehearsals, you name it. Then I did not know, need a lot of money. Money
right.
is like a fly so fast. My saving money is gone. I promised to my student, I could not continue. So, I went to the bank and I borrowed the money. And then the bank said no, because I borrowed a lot of money. And then so I went to the friends. But, all dry out. I could not go anywhere. So it was like a truly is what a nightmare to produce the movie. But I don't regret not in one because I have life lessons from producing this movie.
But the fact that you included ninjas so prominently in the film, was that because of the craze that was going on at the time, or was it the director's idea? Where did that come from?
Oh, yeah. That was director's idea.
Oh, okay.
That is the pop. Yeah.
You also predated the kickboxing craze by a few years, because I think the whole craze kind of kicked off with Van Damme and Kickboxer in 89, and we got Cynthia Rothrock, and Sasha Mitchell, Donald Dragon Wilson, Richard Norris, the list goes on and on. But it was really kind of an early 90s film. So again, your film's kind of falling right in the donut hole. It was an odd time in the first place for a movie like you put out.
Before I produced this movie, I was too busy teaching, promotion, and writing of books.
Right.
So I watched the movie like maybe once a year. I did not know much about the movie.
About the trends, I get you, right.
Yes, that's it. I understand what you mean, but I didn't understand trends, what is going on in the movie world. What I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I was just wondering, because that might have impacted the success or failure of the film at the time, the fact that it was kind of in between this whole ninja craze thing and then this whole kickboxing thing. You were right in this couple of years where there was nothing going on, so...
So only one thing is what I want to do, promote martial art properly. So I want to show the true meaning of martial art spirit. I think you can tell that Dragon Sound, that team, they stick together. They show the real true meaning of friendships. That is the martial art spirit,
And you could tell that the film was an independent production in the truest sense, because it has this kind of a mark of like a mad inventor, like a side art, or someone with a vision that only they can see sets out to make that dream a reality. There's a tremendous amount of heart in it. And while the end result can be disjointed, even a bit crazed, depending on how you're looking at it, that's exactly what makes it enjoyable. And it's the reason that people are flocking to this film and to films like it. For example, like drive-in films, like grindhouse films, shot on video films. Today's corporate films, they're kind of heartless. There's no humanity to them, however well they may be structured. It's like form without substance. But a film like this, if for nothing beyond the laughs that it produces for being less than perfect and whatever thing, it's precious. It's a real party film.
Yeah, you are 100% right. Now, again, I wish everybody is just like you.
Well, there's enough of us. So let's get into a few of the finer points that came up when I reviewed the film a second time. And keep in mind, I'm going more or less chronologically in the film here. First of all, I have to mention that the soundtrack, which I understand came courtesy of Angelo Giannotti, who played Tom in the film, is excellent. I mean, especially the two songs that Drafthouse put out as a single, in which I'm booking the interview with, Friends and Against the Ninja. There's often songs by unknown bands or composers in films from that era, but these really stand out. They're really catchy. My wife and I couldn't get these out of our heads.
Yeah, yes, people truly love this music and song. Lyrics is I wrote, and I give it to Angelo, he's my student. and she did everything.
And, you know, I really enjoyed the reunion footage and the extras because, you know, you guys all seem to age pretty well. And the arrangements, I thought, were even a little more powerful because Evangelo threw in a lot more guitar solos. And then we even get that repeat scene of you tweaking Maurice's nose with your feet. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and the crowd was really into it. But getting back to the film, why was it the Miami connection when you were based in Orlando, not only for the shoot, but in terms of your martial arts school from the interesting cast members?
Yeah, we changed the title a couple of times. It was Escape from Miami, and then beginning it was Against the Ninja. The second, we changed the name Escape from Miami, and then finally we changed the Miami Connections.
You had mentioned in the past that it was difficult to squeeze in time for the film, given that your school was open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So is that still the case with your school?
I opened 8 days a week and 25 hours a day. You know what I'm talking about.
So is that still the case? Are you still open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day?
No, not now.
Okay, because that's kind of unusual. You don't see that sort of thing happening often. And since it's a school and not a typical gym, I was wondering what would go on in the middle of the night. I mean, do you have instructors teaching classes at 3 a.m. or something?
Actually, in the 1980s, I had over 10,000 members.
Right.
That is, 24 hours of people continue coming.
Wow. But they would actually have classes in the middle of the night, or was it just the equipment was there?
We had a class all in the morning and late night. I mean, all day long. In the night time, we had a couple of classes.
That's actually unusual in and of itself. So
nobody did it in the world what I did.
Right. And with the film, the one scene there is like, who knew that being a manager for a nightclub was so hazardous? I love the random martial arts battle that happens between the nightclub owner, who's never named, and that guy from the other house band that he fired in favor of Dragon Sound. And what will become sort of a motif for the film, the one guy alone kicks five guys' asses. There was a lot of like one guy to five guys facing off and winning against this huge numerical odds in the picture.
So you understand this film very well. Huh?
Well, I enjoyed it. I saw it twice already.
You are like an expert. Huh?
Yeah, I saw it once, and then I had my wife came home. Was like, you got to see this movie, so I made her watch it with me again.
Oh yeah.
Yep. And if I get some other friends that like want to hear this thing, I'm going to show it to them again. So, why were the drug dealers so concerned about the band from the outset? Now, this is pretty early in the film, but they were already talking about getting rid of that damn band so they could have free run of the streets. But you didn't even get involved with them yet.
Yeah. You're right. You know, this movie is a movie that I didn't even know what is it, drugs means before I started that movie at all. You know?
I'm just going through the pieces of the film that amused me.
You know, it was funny, this movie. Actually, I think you saw an ending that
right.
Linda is white Linda is a die.
Right.
That guy is not white Linda. We refilmed. I could not find that guy, white Linda. He couldn't come back to and then film it. So other guy is a die. He is like a chef. He died before. He died like one more time, actually. That white ninja.
Yeah, there's a lot of this fun kind of stuff in there. Like, you know, the band who got fired from the nightclub is not only after your band for that, but it appears to be associated with Jess Gang. And Jess Gang also knows martial arts. And I was thinking, like, you know, it's great how everybody in the film, the nightclub owner, the guy who runs the burger joint, who is also the director, everybody knows martial arts. So,
it's in like 99.9% of crews and actors is all my students. Only two people was a professional, director and DP. That's it. That was it.
Wow.
you know, this one again is without is what love of 80s music, and surely is what real action, and true meaning of friendship. The other one because is that editor was a DP and. That director opposed or lack of English. When I see it, when they edited, it was not connected, you know. So we wrote and refilmed and re-recorded and connected. Some of them is what, and I just saw it, Nick and then Walt is not matched yet because
right.
That white ninja, what he says what, something is not matched yet, but anyway, we did.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is it's just fun, so who cares? It's just these are fun things that
you're
going through.
You're right. But, But one good thing is what everybody loves music, everybody loves action, everybody loves that true meaning of friendship, true meaning of that martial arts philosophy and spirit. That is all about this movie.
Right. And there was one thing that was a little bit interesting philosophically, that you guys were trying to be like a truly international band with all the guys, you know, being this guy's from Israel, this guy was, you know, half black, half Korean, and you had this mission to visit everyone's homeland and promote Taekwondo, peace and goodwill. But isn't the practice of a martial art by definition a form of fighting and warfare?
Yeah, you know, the one thing I have to tell you truth, actually, I am a great actor. I know how to express myself better than anybody. I'm a great as a performer. But when I filmed, I was worried about my pronunciation, and then I have to remember that English, I was like, what? Like a dead body. I think you see it, my that acting was like a terrible because you know, I was worried how to say it and that kind of things. But action, but that's I'm an expert, you know. You saw it. Action was
right.
Fantastic and great, you know.
And, you know, that's part of what makes it fun anyway. So, speaking of this and jumping ahead a little bit, what was the significance of making Jim half Korean? Because there didn't seem to be a real reason for that. Was he aiming for the Asian market as well as the domestic U.S.?
I don't know. MGM has a right at this movie. They might show to the all over the country. I was surprised. Is what I mean, 20 different countries, they called here. They want to show now because the internet, you know, everywhere. But depending on MGM, whatever they want, they can do it. You know, they will show all the, you know, Asia or rest of the countries.
And what led you to cast a young man as Jim's father? Because, I mean, that powder or flower that he had in his fro and his eyebrows.
I was looking for a black gentleman or students. So happened to be one student says a black gentleman. So what? We had to do that, you know. He's young,
right.
Very young. So we that was so funny. He was just a young man, you know. You know it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the film has a lot of stuff going on because you even had a couple scenes that were like a dash of the contemporary teen sex comedy, like the beach scenes. And I really enjoyed Tom in those scenes where he was flexing and dancing in the car. You know, Tom really seems to get beat up a lot in this movie. I mean, even beyond getting dick slapped by a bunch of girls and effectively crucified on the roof of a building, the poor guy even gets kidnapped before he can put the roof up on his convertible in the rain. So why did he get singled out? And you know, there's some great scenes in there, like when Jim jumped out of the garbage can. So it turns out that as we get towards the end of the picture, that the ninjas were bikers. Now, I got the impression that the bikers in the middle of the movie were another separate gang, you know, from that scene at the biker bar. And you used actual one percenters for that scene, you know, real life bikers.
You know, as I told you, I did not have clips. So we filmed it that way, you know. Suddenly, we want to make the big, huge. So we called the motorcycle teams. So they come and then we filmed it. It's a lot of different. It's behind the stories. It's just great, fantastic. It's unbelievable. Many, many, many things, you know. One time, you know, I couldn't sleep like 5 days because one person did what, 12 different jobs. So 5 days I couldn't sleep while filming. So, you know, when I drive, I was in ditch because I was sleepy. I was looking up, now I'm talking to you. I didn't die, you know.
Exactly, right. Now, I know that you would handle casting yourself, so how did you get those real-life bikers? Because they aren't usually noted for open-mindedness towards outsiders. But not only did you get them in the film, which was written by and starring several Koreans and a few black men, but you actually had a Korean as their leader. You know, do you have any difficulty approaching them or dealing with them?
No, very fortunately, you know, in Orlando, I had so many students, you know, as I say, over 10,000 members or so. You know, we connect everywhere. You see, City Hall or, you know, police department, sheriff department, and anywhere I go is people in Central Florida, they support the 1,000%, same. So they are all our friends that, you know, motorcycle gangs. You know.
Wow. Okay, that's great. I love the line where the band is driving to the airport to pick up Jim's father, where he's like, uh-oh, ninjas, like it's an everyday occurrence to run into ninjas. I understand that the film's doing quite well for Draft House, and there's a notice on their website saying that the warehouse was out of stock on both DVDs and Blu-rays at the time that I scratched up the interview. Quite a change from when you were shopping the film around in 1987, no?
Oh, yeah. A big difference.
There's also something priceless I'd love to get my hands on if the folks at Draft House are listening, which is the Dragon Sound tank top that they produce, just like the band is wearing in the movie. I take an extra large, by the way. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Grandmaster YK Kim. Coming up, we talk the 5 pounds of fitness, the new American dream, and Miami Connection, the sequel, only here on Third Eye Cinema. Martial arts world. There's a magazine you produce, and one of the issues features you together with Chuck Norris on the cover. So how did you get involved with Chuck?
We are martial artists. I respect him, and I have my own magazine that martial arts world, so I interviewed with him.
Now, in terms of the schools themselves, beyond the standard physical discipline and martial training,
are you a martial artist?
I used to do Okinawan karate, but that was many years ago.
Okinawan karate, let me explain about some martial arts world. Martial arts world is modern martial arts. It is totally from any of the other organizations. Martial arts world, we teach as a physical fitness. Let me ask you, what is the most important thing in your life? You know, some people say love, some people say money, some people, you know, some like our politician says power, some people say family. But you know, and I know, without a physical fitness, I cannot do anything, you cannot do anything, nobody can do anything. So we emphasize this, number one is a physical fitness. Number two, intelligent people do stupid things because they don't have mental fitness. They cannot maximize their potential. So we are teaching mental of fitness. So anybody, everybody can maximize their lives so they can have a true successful life. And then number three, belief is stronger than fact and truth. You know, why America, we had a 9/11 tragedy? Because the terrorists, they believed if they killed the American, they can go to the heaven. But that's not true. That's not a fact. So many people screw up without moral fitness. So we teaching moral fitness. That's the foundation of life. And then number four, we are teaching, we emphasize this. We live in the richest country on earth. However, 87% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck because they do not have a financial fitness. So they have a financial pressure. So we teaching our members is a financial fitness so they can build the financial power. Finally, you know, why do you think the United States of America is the superpower world? Some people say because we have a big land. Some people say because we have a lot of resources. Some people say because of people. But other countries, as a bigger land, they have a lot of resources, and then same people are all over the country. But you know, and I know why the United States of America is the superpower is personal freedom.
That's true.
Personal freedom creates a personal power. Personal power is the personal leadership. And that personal freedom creates many creators, like Thomas Edison. Without the personal freedom, they cannot think properly.
Exactly.
So we're teaching that personal freedom. In order to have a personal freedom, we have to have a personal leadership. In order to have a personal leadership, have to have a life of fitness. We're teaching life of fitness. We're teaching actually five kinds of fitness, five kinds of fitness that creates winning features. So anybody practice martial arts with the martial arts world, they will be healthier, wealthier, and happier. Totally new success of and martial arts institutions.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this because you actually touched on where I was going to go. Because I was thinking, in terms of the schools themselves, beyond the standard physical discipline and martial training, you do seem to take a uniquely philosophically centered approach to martial arts. You know, much like Bruce Lee with his Tao or Jeet Kune Do, I'm fascinated by your approach here. You know, to quote from your school's page, martial arts without philosophy is practically the same as street gang fighting. If we only practice kicking and punching, it's animalistic. We emphasize that every student maximizes their potential to become healthier, wealthier, and happier. So effectively, you're dovetailing standard Taekwondo training into your inspirational speaking sideline. So do you find this actually benefits your students? Because it's very unusual. And just to play devil's advocate for a minute, some could see this as almost like, I hate to say cult-like, but, you know, like, it's different. So how would you answer those questions?
The martial arts world is totally different from any of the other institutions. Martial arts world is an institution of self-improvement programs. So smartphone is what? It's always innovate. Martial arts industry, same thing. We need to innovate. Some other people, they didn't innovate yet, but very fortunately, martial arts world, we innovate traditional martial arts, so we teach modern martial arts. That is the reason we are very successful in martial arts world.
Right, but being a whole lifestyle approach like it is, people could argue that this is almost cult-like. Now, I don't see it that way, but how would you answer that?
No one can against what I am teaching. Why? Because everything is based on nature. It is not religion. It is
right.
Not any other what stupid things. It is based on nature. Nature is represent two things: is harmony and balance. Without
right.
harmony and balance, nothing works.
That's true.
There is a, there is a reason. To look at what is going on in USA today. I mean, 67% of American is what? It's overweight. Because I mean, there is too many people are suffering because of that. Why? Because it's unbalanced lifestyle. You know, technology
exactly.
growing like a crazy, but our lifestyle did not improve. There is a reason I am teaching is a modern martial arts. So it's nobody can is against what I am teaching when I explain it. Everybody loves the martial arts philosophy, martial arts worldview. A curriculum.
And I can see that. I can see where the intent is. You're exactly right. So I'm just going to say this again because you already mentioned this, but tell us about how the physical fitness of martial arts study are enhanced by the other 4 points of your five kinds of fitness.
You know, physical fitness, the one thing is what? True success requires harmony and balance. Martial arts course, if they're just kicking and punching, they don't teach it. They do not teach real physical fitness at all. You know, number one, they have to eat and drink wisely. Number two, they have to exercise daily. Number three, they have to rest properly, recharge the energy. Number four, think positively. So without the four, no one can have a true or physical fitness. If they eat junky food, they will be junky. They don't exercise, they don't clean up their body will be junk. And then we don't recharge energy, so we have to rest properly. If we don't recharge energy, we cannot do anything. Three things is everybody knows why they cannot do it, because they have a mental fat. We have to think positively, you know, so we can eat and drink wisely, exercise daily, and rest properly, so we can have healthier, stronger, and a happier, positive body. That's what I'm teaching.
And you know, what's interesting about your approach is there's always been a strong tradition in Asian martial arts of tying the physical disciplines together with a religious or a mystical philosophy like Buddhism or Taoism, and there's always been a strong emphasis on gaining inner strength and peace. I mean, you look at the softer arts like Tai Chi Chuan or Qigong, but you seem to be looking more towards like a Tony Robbins, Norman Vincent Peale, Zig Ziglar sort of material success and business-centric focus, which strikes me as being kind of unusual. It's very unique.
I didn't even know how to express myself in English at all, so I could not actually teach philosophy probably at all. So what I did is what dictionary, and I bite and chewing and swallowed. So now, you know, I can express myself English and philosophy, so I can teach them. And then I wrote over 30 books and published 14 books. So in order to writing that many books, I had to read what? Thousands of books. So I taught myself what I had to use. So I continue innovate the martial arts. It's people, when they come, if they hurt each other, it's nobody will come back. And when they need to improve themselves, they should not hurt each other, you know. So
right.
Martial arts world, the people, they love, and it's so many people practicing martial arts world, and then they change their lives so they can have a real successful life, you know.
You did include an infomercial on the Miami Connection Blu-ray for the New American Dream, which is your book and program for personal success. We've already touched on the five kinds of fitness, so tell us about the five classes of people and the top 10 successful habits.
Yeah. One thing people top 10 successful habits is what? I'm teaching five different kinds of self-defense. Physical self-defense, mental self-defense, moral self-defense, financial self-defense, and life self-defense. Most martial arts schools are teaching only physical self-defense. But physical self-defense, they're teaching like a 10% of self-defense. For example, if you eat junky food, that means you punch yourself. And then you
right.
take the drugs, is what? You poke yourself. I mean, stress. If you get those stress, you just hammer yourself. So we're teaching physical self-defense is what? 1,000%. And then, you know why people fight? Why fight? That's usually beginning what? Because of verbal problems. So we're teaching verbal self-defense. It's very, very important, you know, brothers and sisters and mother, fathers and friends, because one word can kill other people. One word can save other people. So we're
right.
teaching verbal self-defense. If anyone who discourages you, anyone who criticizes you, anyone who uses bad language, just we say thank you and laugh and just smile so we can handle it. We not let other people control us, control ourselves. It's very important. But number three is most important. If someone is violent, verbally or physically, you can run away. But you cannot run away from you. That's
true.
What is self-attack? Anxiety, you name it. Fear. I mean, so many different things self-attack. You know, all human beings, you know what? I know it. 50,000 doors. So too many things attack us. You are in New York or go to the Daytona Beach or L.A. Wherever you go, the cell phone takes to follow you. You don't depend on yourself. You never have a personal freedom. You never have a successful life. So we're teaching self-attack, how to defend yourself. So important, you know, there is a reason too many people depressed. Depressed is what? It's because they cannot express themselves. They keep their anger and frustration, all things inside themselves.
True.
So we're teaching how to build that inner power, internal strength, you know, like what? Love and discipline. So they can defend themselves from self-attack, so they can have freedom. True freedom, you know. Number four, I mean, why 87% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck? Because they don't have financial fitness. Why? Because they don't know how to defend themselves from the financial attacks. That plastic card. Plastic card is America. You know, like a college graduate student, oh my God, average student is when they graduate college, $30,000 debt. So they should do what? Make more, spend less. And they need to have a saving habit, and they still invest for success. So we're teaching here that is what a self-defense. So many people, some people, they like a plus card, credit card debt, like $30,000-$40,000, and then they pay off, and they save them like $90,000-$100,000, you know, because we discipline here. And then number four, we're teaching life and self-defense. You have, I have, everybody has what? It's a great potential. There are over 100 billion cells in human brain. You know what? Each cell has the capability to create energy like a nuclear bomb. If you say, or anybody say, I have no potential to succeed, and they should not fool themselves, you know? Actually, they can do anything and everything they set their mind to do. Why they cannot do it? Because, you know, they worry about what other people say. They worry about what other people think. And then what? They worry about, yeah, I am poor, so I cannot do anything. Yeah, I'm weak, so I cannot do anything. I'm minority, I cannot do anything. Because they block themselves. So life itself, they can maximize their potential. And they can what? They can push their own limitations. So they can have a true successful life. That's self-defense. I'm so proud to teach my students It's a real self-defense, you know?
There was one thing that you touched on in your infomercial that, you know, just to take it up to the silly side, that I found amusing. Because you had mentioned that Americans are in desperate need of exercise, which is true. But you say that there's some simple exercises one can do while driving. What are these? Because the one that you demonstrated in the video involved raising both hands and tapping your palms.
This year or next year, I will publish the books that about conscious fitness and the U.S. National Exercise. You know, these days, too many people too busy to practice, and some people hate to practice, and some people too difficult to practice, and because no time to practice and no place to practice. So I created anybody can practice 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. They don't have to spend not in 1 second. Then while driving, they can exercise. While they're on the airline, they can exercise. When they sleep, they can exercise. And when they are in office, they can exercise. They can exercise anywhere, anytime, any place. Even, you know, while driving, they can have a sweat, actually, without releasing your stress. You know what? I know it. You know,
right.
We will have, too much stress. Stress is what? 80% of sickness. That is bad. You know, without stress, I cannot have a successful life. But don't know how to release our stress. We will get in big trouble. That is the reason I created the power exercise, which is U.S. National Exercise. I think it will revolutionize Americans' lifestyle. This year, I don't know when exactly. This year, I will produce DVDs and books and CDs. I think it will change the America lifestyle, not just the USA, all over the world. It will change the world.
But the one exercise I found funny, because you mentioned you do it while driving, but it involved raising both hands and tapping your palms with the fingers of the same hand, like almost like making a raised fist and letting it go in quick succession. But if you were doing that while you were driving, I imagine it's kind of dangerous.
I really appreciate your questions. Even my wife said when I created this exercise, please don't do it. So many people will sue you, you know. You will have a law, you know. I truly mean it. It's a true story. You know, I have a so busy schedule. Sometimes I had to interview like 10 different places a day. I have no time to exercise because
right.
I'm in the car. You know what I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah.
You know, for example, one, you and I have a smile, a positive smile, and then one, laugh. If you laugh for 10 times, you will get sweat, actually.
Really?
So that, yeah. Yes. If you laugh loud 10 times, so, you know, it's what? You will get sweat and it releases all your stress. For one example, it's so safe. So safe for that, what, driving exercise. I know when I publish this book, I will be on so many national TVs, you know, everywhere, and nationwide and worldwide. People will be crazy about the U.S. national exercise. It will help so many innocent people all over the world. I mean, too many people get sick because there is a reason. The United States of America, you know, health care cost is crazy now. I mean, sky's the limit. Not too much to pay. Prevention
right.
is better. Sure. You know what I'm talking about, yeah?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah, so when this book come out, I think society probably will be crazy, you know? And you will help so many innocent people.
I'm looking forward to seeing this.
Yeah, less people will get sick, more people get energized themselves because they can exercise anywhere, anytime, 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. When they sleep, while they sleep, they can exercise.
So, in sum, what really is the new American dream?
The American dream that I immigrated from Korea, I was looking for American dream. And I set the goal, I will achieve the American dream. When I achieved the American dream, I had financial freedom, and I became a very famous, rich and famous in martial arts world. I was so powerful, but never go away my anxiety and mental anguish. So I could not say I'm successful, you know. And then I saw some people, they are so educated, and some people is what? Very healthy, but it's something they're missing. So I found what true success requires harmony and balance.
True.
That is the reason over 50 million Americans is what? Are suffering because drugs and alcoholics and drugs.
True.
And on and on I've been talking about this one, is what? But this one's the new American dream, and that is U.S. National Exercise, and what I'm writing now almost finished the five kinds of fitness, you will help hundreds and hundreds of millions of people all over the world. You know?
So any upcoming projects you want to promote to the listeners? Because I understand that you're planning on making a sequel to Miami Connection.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, I have to. I must. I love it. Why? Because I want to produce a movie as quality as like an Academy Award. So everybody, young and old, family together come to the theater and fun and exciting and meaningful to watch. Not just to watch it, something they can learn it. Not just to learn it and beneficial. Based on that the five kinds of fitness, that's what I'm going to produce the new movie.
Wow. So are you? Did you write up a script? Do you have ideas for this? Have you spoken to anybody? Is this a project in progress?
First, I got to finish it, this book. This
okay.
book, is I wrote this one last 35 years. That's
wow.
a long two books. Last 35. How many people, you know, writing two books is 35 years? So two more times editing, you will finish it. I
wow.
love it. I love it. I live with, I breathe with this book. It's good because now I can say in front of anybody, anywhere, any place, I am very successful, you know, physically,
right.
mentally, morally, financially, and my life.
Nice.
So I'm honored to share with you, people. So I want to help people. Number one, I truly appreciate for your interview that Thaddeus I Cinema. You are great interviewer.
Thank you.
I could not believe. And you are great a communicator. You made me so comfortable. That's great.
Well, thank you.
And
I
want everybody, at least one, is watch the Miami Connection. And I really appreciate all audience as listens to Third Eye Cinema.
With that, Grandmaster Kim, I'd like to thank you for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema, and we'd love to have you back on in the future, discuss whatever you have on tap, especially if you get that sequel to Miami Connection rolling.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
So
and
when you come down, yeah, when you have a chance to come down to the Orlando Disney World, please let us know.
Awesome. I'll come in for a lesson.
Okay. Bye.
Take care. Bye. And to close out our interview with Grandmaster Kim, we have another great song from Dragon Sound. This is a declaration of war against the ninja.
Hey!
you enjoyed our close and personal interview with Grandmaster YK Kim. We'll be back in 2 weeks on week 47 of Third Eye Cinema with a musical guest. Stay tuned. Contact us here, comments, suggestions, or if you're a filmmaker or musician you'd like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. If you missed any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive, listen, or download at your convenience. See you in 2 weeks.
What's in store for your business this week at Staples?
Doing business like a CEO while saving like a CFO.
Staples has all the supplies you need to run your business like a boss at prices that'll make your bookkeeper smile.
Now that is an achievement.
Everything from markers and pens to 2019 desk calendars.
And right now, a 12-pack of Sharpie markers and an 8-pack of Expo dry erase markers are only $4.99 each.
At Staples, where there's a whole lot in store. Ends 1/19/19 in store only.